6-year-old Palestinian girl, Hind Rajab, killed on January 29th in an Israeli attack, along with 6 members of her family. They were in a car. They were desperately calling to the Red Crescent and saying that they were under attack in a car. 2 paramedics got permission to go to try to help them. They also were killed in the Israeli second strike, what the experts say may amount to a war crime. This is you questioning State Department spokesperson Vedant Patel.
So has the Biden-Harris administration followed up on this alleged lie by the Israeli government, or sought to confirm any of Israel's claims on the half-year-old killing now of this girl and her family?
So we are in touch with our partners in Israel around the clock on a variety of issues. I don't have any specifics to read out as it relates to this conversation. I'm happy to check if there have been any additional updates, but to my understanding, this investigation is still ongoing, and I will leave it to them to speak to the details of it.
So I had reached out to the Israeli government as well, and while I was reaching out to the Red Crescent, they said they would get back to me with an answer, and that did not after we reported the Red Crescent said that
Well, it's really, I'm not a spokesperson for the responsiveness of another foreign
Given that, you know, this government gives them billions of dollars in aid, I imagine that such claims would want to be fact-checked.
So we will continue to engage with our partners in Israel. We ask them for additional information. We ask questions when we see incidents unfold, and we'll continue to do that. As it relates to this incident, I'm not aware of any updates, and I believe this investigation is ongoing.
That's State Department spokesperson Vedant Patel being continually questioned many times over weeks, months, about the investigation into Hind Rajab. You have 15 seconds, Prem. Have you gotten an answer yet?
I have not gotten an answer. It's been over 240 days of me and other press colleagues continuing to ask about the killing of Hind Rajab, her family members, the medics sent to save her, as well as several other human rights violations, and we have not yet gotten an answer.
I want to thank you both for being with us, Prem Tucker of Zateo News and Steve Neveling of the Detroit Metro Times. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, in the Portland metro area, and all over the world at KBOO.FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Development Committee meeting will be held on Monday, September 30th at 5:30 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify a meeting is being...
KBOO has a mobile app. You can listen to all your favorite shows, subscribe to KBOO podcasts, even set KBOO as your alarm clock. Just look for KBOO on the iTunes and Google Play Store. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star review.
What's up, everybody? This is Goddess and She, and you're tuning in to KBOO Portland. Holla at your girl.
We want to smash, crash, smash, smash, blast the system. We want to get it hype, get it live. With the mission, we run the crowd loud. This pumping rhythm is hitting. We wanna make it clear, we ain't scared. This is the vision we want. We want, we want.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. It's our annual Banned Books Week special. Across the United States, the past several years has brought staggering increase in book challenges, bans, and other attacks on the right to read and academic freedom. But there are many signs of hope, which Banned Books Week celebrates. On today's program, we welcome the new president of the American Library Association, Cindy Hall. We discuss the latest report just released from ALA on the state of the right to read. Then we're joined by Banned Books Week honorary youth chair, Julia Garnett, about how young people are on the front lines of censorship battles in schools, and they're fighting back and winning. We'll also hear from the interim director of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, attorney Jeff Trexler, about a history of attacks on comics and other literature, and we'll learn of some recent legal victories, but also challenges to come. Join us today on the Project Censored Show as we celebrate the 42nd anniversary of Banned Books Week. Stay tuned.
Unthinkable crimes perpetrated by a criminal ties, habitualize, alibis, disguise, another guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies like an ominous.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. Today's program is the annual Banned Books Week special, and people that have been listening to the show, especially in the last couple years, know that I've been doing several programs a year on challenges and bans and book censorship because there have been record levels of challenges. And this year, we're seeing a similar trend continue. We are honored right now as our first guest today. We're delighted to welcome Cindy Hall, Director of Policy Analysis and Operational Support at Kansas City Public Library, also the President of the American Library Association. And just a little bit more about our guest, Cindy's the past president of American Indian Library Association and an active member of other ALA affiliates, including Asian Pacific American Librarians Association, Black Caucus of ALA, Chinese American Librarians Association, and Reforma, the National Association to Promote Library and Information Services to Latinos and the Spanish speaking. So, Cindy Hall, again, thank you for taking time out of your very busy schedule, especially around Banned Books Week. So I know that you all have a new study. You have updates about what's happening. Tell us, what is the state of our right to read in the United States today? Cindy Hall.
Thank you, Mickey. I appreciate the question, and absolutely, we're always here to help everyone celebrate their right to read in America. So when we're looking at the recent data, there's some good news to be encouraged about. When we look at January 1st to August 31st of 2024, our ALA Office of Intellectual Freedom tracked 414 challenges to censor library materials and services. In those cases, 1,128 unique titles were challenged. So while it's unfortunate to hear that we would ever have any challenges, the good news is that that is a decrease from the year before, when there were 695 cases tracked within the same reporting period. So as we continue to look at the trends and see how the community is responding to their library collection, it's interesting to see that perhaps the past attempts to censor books have started to move in a new direction.
That's welcome news, albeit still incredibly alarming numbers, particularly looking back since 2020. There's been a rather extraordinary escalation in attempts to ban this. And just very briefly, since I do a show on this every year, but I'd like to have you perhaps explain to people the history of Banned Books Week, going back to 1982 on the heels of the PICO case. Perhaps you can talk a little bit about why we have Banned Books Week. Some folks, just like when they ask Project Censored, they're like, wait, are you in favor of censorship? And we're like, my goodness, of course not. When people look at Banned Books Week, sometimes they don't realize it's a celebration of the right to read. It's raising awareness that there are always challenges around the corner where people somewhere or groups somewhere are trying to restrict access to information, especially in our public school. Cindy Hall.
Right. So as you said, Banned Book Week has been observed for more than 40 years now. And this is an opportunity for us to bring awareness to the attempts to remove books and materials from libraries, schools, and bookstores. And as we continue to move down this pathway of responding to those challenges and attempts, we want to make sure that the message that gets out is that we are encouraging everyone to recognize their freedoms, to celebrate their right to read in America. You know, the First Amendment is for everyone. And so it's very important that we continue to share these messages. And while it's unfortunate we have to have a Banned Book Week, it's something where we will continue to support our readers, because that is the role of the American Library Association. We are here to support library workers, library staff, readers, and ultimately increase the value of literacy in America. So as we celebrate this year, our theme is going to be Freed Between the Lines. And it's an observance of the freedom we find in the pages of books and the need to defend that freedom from censorship. Librarians didn't go into this work to be on the front lines defending democracy. But we're here for it, Mickey. We're going to continue to make sure that everyone has equal opportunities to access information.
Well, Cindy, you said it about right there. You are on the front line, and we're in solidarity with you as part of the Banned Books Week Coalition. We're also part of the National Coalition Against Censorship. Project Censored, of course, has been fighting against censorship in the news media since 1976. You really are on the front lines, and people need to realize the service that librarians, what they contribute to society, public libraries, and especially, again, in our schools. And Cindy, I wanted to know if you could talk a little bit about part of the troubling trend beyond the fact that there has been this record uptick in books. And you just said this year, so far, the numbers have been down from last year, which was a record year, I believe. But it is fall, school's back in session, it's an election year. I don't want to be cynical, but I do know that the censors are out there and people get animated in election years. Can you talk about the kinds of books that are most likely to be targeted? It looks about, you know, according to United Against Book Bans, about half the books that are targeted are titles that represent voices and lived experiences of LGBTQIA+ and BIPOC individuals. Cindy, can you talk about that?
Yeah, definitely. We continue to see year-over-year trends, similar titles that are being added to the list. So when titles are identified where the content is being reported as inappropriate for certain audiences, oftentimes the reporter hasn't even read the book in its entirety and will hear that only snippets taken out of context. And so when you look at the storyline, and it is about someone's experience in life, either as a Black Indigenous person of color or on the LGBTQIA community, why is it that we continue to see these challenges come up specifically for those storylines? That's very problematic because, in essence, what we're hearing is that individuals are being dehumanized through that process. What we're hearing is that only certain voices are allowed in society and others should be silenced. When we exclude anyone from our community, that is not a step toward democracy. That is not a step toward supporting everyone's First Amendment rights. And when we continue to oppress anyone in our community, that isn't a healthy environment for anyone. And we really need to get to the bottom of this, especially in schools, where we have curriculum in place to support learners, where we have trained professionals, often with a Master of Library and Information Science degree. Depending on the state, they may even have a teaching certificate on top of that or a dual degree. There are so many opportunities for us to support our community in the best way. And I don't believe oppressing voices will get us there.
Yeah, absolutely not, Cindy Hull. Just a reminder, we're speaking with the president of the American Library Association, Cindy Hull. We're talking about the American Library Association's update on the most challenged books of the year so far, with a report from the ALA on the trends in book censorship. And Cindy, I wanted to come back a minute to these challenges in schools went beyond individuals wanting a certain book off the shelf. Somewhere around 90% of the book banning efforts last year involved multiple title challenges where people or groups like Moms for Liberty in Florida and elsewhere sort of astroturfed across the country, and they would generate these massive lists basically to take books off the shelves. And of course, looking at a place like Florida, you know, Moms for Liberty founded there in 2021, home of the so-called Don't Say Gay Law. These were right-wing reactions to what they saw as wokeness as being a bad thing or DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion policies. And they also, in addition to the multiple title challenges, they started going after school board seats across the country to try to unseat people to have stealth candidates that would work to censor books. Cindy Hull.
Yes, we have seen that activity. And as groups want to mobilize and create distractions in their community, it's very important that we lean on our libraries to help us identify accurate information from credible sources. when you see misinformation being spread, it's an opportunity for you to really pay close attention. Why is it only certain voices are being elevated? Why is it only certain groups are looking to create this division among their neighbors? That is essentially what we're talking about. And as we are all informed readers, we should be here talking about the beauty of literacy, celebrating readership, encouraging people to read. That is the basis of a healthy foundation for any community. And instead, we're hearing that continued attempts at oppression are moving across the country, that we have certain individuals who feel that they know what's best for their neighbor. And we can really only make those decisions for ourselves and our families. So as we continue to respond to these challenges, we're going to do our best to help people access that accurate information. And we encourage people to join us through our Unite Against Book Bans campaign. And that website, uniteagainstbookbans.org, is available to anyone. We encourage members of the community to visit that website and to join us in this national advocacy campaign, where we will inform, empower, and mobilize advocates everywhere. And we're all standing up for the right to read. I think that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And you can also find more information at ALA.org, BannedBooksWeek.org as well. Again, the whole show today is dedicated to Banned Books Week. So we're going to have a few more guests on. We have a couple more minutes in this segment, Cindy Hall. And my understanding in the last year is there's been a rather extraordinary uptick in bans aimed at public libraries. Can you address that uptick?
Yes. Well, I proudly work in a public library. And every day we open our doors to all of the beautiful people of our community. That's what we're here to do. And it's a privilege and an honor to serve. And so every day we open our doors and people come in to engage with the collection, to attend a program, to connect with a service provider. And a lot of patrons are accessing the internet and using computer and other technology in libraries. Libraries are bustling places, information hubs of their community, and absolutely staffed with wonderful information professionals who are trusted and who are here to serve in the best way possible. So when public libraries started receiving challenge attempts, not only for materials, but also for programs and even displays, it was really curious to follow that activity because we were starting to see people who maybe didn't even use the library on a regular basis. And you could see them coming in and taking photos, you know, and you knew that a challenge was going to be coming, whether they chose to engage with you or not. I do recall a lady having a question about a bookmark that they found in the stacks. They were concerned, you know, it was just a book cover. It was a book jacket. So all we can do is listen to the feedback, engage in dialogue, hopefully having that conversation and helping people see that, you know, if you don't like the artwork, you don't have to pick up the book. If you get into it 10-20%, you don't like the content of the story, put the book down. There's so many beautiful books and stories out there. You don't have to read anything, but you don't have the right to tell anyone else what they can or cannot read either. So in public libraries, when we were seeing public programs being questioned and people wanting to come in and picket against that and saying, this is unfair, certain celebrities should have story times and not others, it's really problematic. And as a community, we should want to be strong. And so strong communities have strong libraries. And that means that we are going to stand up and defend everyone's equal right to use their library and to access information.
Cindy Hall, I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank you for what you do and all the librarians out there and the people that work in libraries and work around these wonderful educational institutions. I have to give a quick shout out. One of my best friends I grew up with, Blake, is a librarian. He's been a librarian for over a couple decades in Southern Washington. I know the challenges that he faces on a day-to-day basis, and I know budgetary constraints are always an issue. There's always other challenges, and yet putting the challenge of book bans on top of it all, it sometimes probably feels like a slap in the face for how much librarians give back to community. That's why I think we need to stand in solidarity together to fight against book bans, to be freed between the lines, as the theme for this year says. Last minute we have here, Cindy Hall, Can you point to some recent victory, some recent positive thing? People are fighting back. Young people are fighting back. Students are fighting back. It's very heartening to see this. Cindy Hall, can you mention something that's a victory for libraries and the right to read?
Well, absolutely. You know, we have to keep hope, and we are encouraged every day. We're encouraged when anyone comes in and engages with a book because we're serving our purpose. We're here to help people. And so, you know, looking at in Arkansas, our ALA Freedom to Read Foundation also worked with local partners in securing a preliminary injunction from the federal district court that halted the enforcement of Arkansas Act 372. And this law would have opened librarians and bookstore owners to criminal prosecution unless they remove shelves of materials that were deemed unsuitable for the youngest of minors, intended to serve older minors and adults. So it's interesting when you look at what the original complaint was, how that challenge moves through the process. And in all of this, Mickey, it's very expensive. And these are taxpayers' dollars that we're dealing with all of the challenges, with all the removals. If a library has to take down hundreds of books and review them and go through that process, that's tax money that's supporting those efforts. And we have strong collection development policies. So that is a plus. When you go to a library, go to their website if you're curious. Ask a librarian. We're here to help. Chat with us online. In New Jersey, they also advocate for the North Hunterdon-Voorhees Regional High School District. They successfully kept books on the shelf for their students to be able to read. And I know coming up next is Julia Garnett down in Tennessee, and we're so proud of her and her efforts as she advocated for student representation on book review committees. And she was honored by First Lady Dr. Jill Biden for her advocacy work. So to see our youth rise up, that's a beautiful moment in America.
Cindy Hall, president of the American Library Association, thank you so much for the important work you do. And thank you for taking time out of your very busy schedule to help us celebrate Banned Books Week at the Project Censored Show this year. You're right, we do have Julia Garnett coming up, Youth Honorary Chair of Banned Books Week, as well as Jeff Trexler from the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. So we're going to continue our programming here for Banned Books Week. Special thanks to Raymond Garcia and Betsy Gomez for making our conversation possible. Cindy Hall, thank you once again for joining us on the program today.
Thank you so much, Mickey. We appreciate all of the work that you do. Goodbye.
Coming up next on the Project Censored Show, we'll hear from Banned Books Week Youth Honorary Chair Julia Garnett, and we'll also hear from Jeff Trexler, the interim director at the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, as we continue to celebrate Banned Books Week here on the Project Censored Show. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. Today on the program, we celebrate the right to read and Banned Books Week. No, we do not celebrate the banning and censorship and challenging of books. We want to raise awareness that in the last 5 years, there have been disturbing trends and significant upticks in these challenges and bans. We just talked to the president of the ALA. And right now, I am delighted to be joined by this year's Youth Honorary Chair, Julia Garnett, a dedicated advocate for freedom to read, very passionate about ensuring that young people can grow up free from censorship. Julia has worked with the National Coalition Against Censorship as a student advocates for speech leader to educate her peers on the importance of speaking out against censorship. And last year, Julia was honored for her work at the White House by none other than First Lady Dr. Jill Biden. Julia has also worked with the Trevor Project, which I'm familiar with. Very, very wonderful work there, to share her story as a queer advocate for diverse material as part of the organization's Pride in Action campaign. And Julia is at Smith College this fall with plans to major in government. Also, again, congratulations being Banned Books Week this year, their youth honorary chair. Julia Garnett, welcome to the Project Censored Show.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here.
I'm looking forward to our conversation. And also, we welcome Jeff Trexler. Jeff is the interim director at the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. And of course, folks that listen to the Project Censored Show, the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, CBLDF.org, are no strangers to that work. And I've had several graphic novelists on, graphic journalist authors, and we've covered comic banning on this program for many years. And Jeff Trexler, it's an honor to have you with us this year.
Same here. You do wonderful, wonderful work, and it's great to hear with both of you.
Let's go ahead and start with you, Julia. Let's talk about your trajectory, you know, and your path to being this year's youth honorary chair. You've been pretty busy, even at a young age, fighting for the right to read, fighting against censorship. Can you talk to us about that?
Yes. I'm often asked how I got to this position, and I always start with, it's kind of a long story. You know, I didn't start out wanting to be an activist. I just wanted to protect books that mattered to me. And one book in particular is the book A Place Inside of Me by Zeta Elliott. It's a children's book that was in a school library in Sumner County, Tennessee, where I'm originally from. And parents and community members on both sides of the argument on if this book should be banned were kind of very divided on this issue in my county. And being the daughter of a teacher, my mom came home and told me that this is a book that I think you should read and you should see why people are trying to ban it. And then I think you might want to go speak at the school board meeting and defend this book. And so I immediately went online, I read the book, and it's such a powerful and moving story about the emotions that a young Black boy goes through after witnessing a police shooting. And there's beautiful illustrations to go along with this poetic writing within the book. And so upon reading this and feeling just empathy for the character within the story, I knew how important it was that this book needed to stay on shelves in school libraries in my county. And so I went and I spoke at my first school board meeting. I didn't know what I was walking into, and it was kind of a chaotic mess at times. I didn't know where to sit. I didn't know who to sit with. Just me and my dad, and we went and we heard our school board members before the meeting could even start talking about books and their views on a completely different book, actually, that they wanted banned. But I was just kind of watching my school board members and realizing that my elected officials, some of them weren't doing their jobs, and that was frustrating to me. And so I went up to the podium and I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified to go and speak. And there were so many people there. And I just remember I started, you know, I'm a little shaky. I'm holding the podium for dear life. But I get to this part that I'd hastily written while I was listening to them argue. And I told my school board members, you are acting like children. And the room like erupts. There's cheering. There's also a lot of grumbling, which had been happening the whole time I was already speaking, the grumbling part. So it took all that fear out of me, honestly, because I realized, oh, there are people in this community who were there that I didn't realize were there to support me. And so I continued speaking. And unfortunately, they couldn't come to a majority vote at that meeting. And so there was another meeting on down the line to vote on that book all over again. But it did stay. And from there, I learned the power of my own voice as a student. And I decided to continue showing up to meetings wherever I could. And I also joined, I had to really fight actually to be on a review committee for my high school. And so I reviewed the book, The Perks of Being a Wallflower, there. And amidst all of this, I also joined the National Coalition Against Censorship's Student Advocates for Speech program to start a club at my own high school and educate students on issues surrounding censorship and ways that we can stand up and fight them. So through all that, I also gained national recognition. I've done a lot of different news interviews, radio interviews, things like that. And I was nominated by my community for International Day of the Girl in October of 2023. And so I was invited to the White House to join a cohort of 14 other young women from across the country. And we were honored for our different areas of advocacy because we all come from different places and we have different passions, but we all are linked by that passion that like fuels us. And so I got to meet Dr. Jill Biden, honored at a ceremony within the White House, and it was just such an amazing experience. I'm still connected with all of those young women, and we still share our accomplishments. We support each other and everything that we're doing. So it was such an honor, and I've continued to share my story on different platforms since then. And that has led up to me being the Youth Honorary Chair.
Julia Garnett, what an absolutely inspirational story. And thank you so much for your courage and for your empathy, and realizing that that is a very powerful thing that you can channel into the public arena to be civically engaged in meaningful ways. And the thing that struck me right from the beginning of your story was the particular book that you had mentioned, and about the struggles of a young Black boy. And you don't look like a young Black boy. The reason I'm mentioning that is the stories don't have to be exactly about us or look like us in order for us to understand what's happening and how injustices occur. And in many cases, injustices are perpetuated because there isn't a Julia to go and stand up at a school board or at a library. And, you know, like you said, you were at the holding onto the podium. Believe me, I've been there. But I still remember my early days. It's very scary to get up in front of a room like that. And especially as a young person, not knowing what's going to happen and feeling judged by your community. But I can only give you the biggest accolades for overcoming that and doing that, because you're really making a difference in your own community. And then you make a difference in the lives of other people, including people that are different than you and that you haven't even met. That's the beauty of that trajectory that you seem to be on. And of course, it's not surprising to me that you seem to be interested in majoring in government, because we surely need young people getting more involved in government to fix the things that are wrong with our government from the local to the national level. So Julia Garnett, again, so inspirational. Great to hear how you've got there. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more with you. And Jeff Trexler, let's get your path and trajectory. You are now leading the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. Comic books are really important. They were some of the first things that governments would go after, especially in the 1950s and the Cold War. And they weren't taken seriously, yet they were taken seriously enough that governments and other bodies wanted to censor them and prevent young people from reading them. Let's talk about you, Jeff Trexler, and let's segue into why you do what you do at the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund.
Comic books have been seen as a threat for a long time. And in many ways, the surge that we've been seeing over the past 5 years has deep roots in that movement 70 years ago. And part of the reason is, I think what Julie was talking about, there is this power in the fusion of word and image. It can make an impression on our minds. It conveys a lot of information. It has this tremendous ability to show, I think, the best and worst parts of who we are as a community, as a nation, as a world, you know, as humanity. And I think that there's a tendency to be a bit afraid of that. I think when you see something that stark, that iconic, whether it's from a children's picture book to comic books, it really took the fusion of word and image to new heights in American culture, and was thus seen as a threat to more traditional forms of literacy, more traditional media. Now, you know, comics are everywhere. They really are a template for 21st century communication. You understand how comics work. You understand how modern communication works. And I think people, even decades later, see this as a risk. So we have enjoyed a long partnership with Banned Books Week. Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, like Banned Books Week, was started back in the 1980s when there was a surge of challenges in schools and libraries, and also directed against retail stores. We were founded after a comic shop manager was convicted for selling several comic books that are now regarded as classics. The comic book community came together as a community. It's another wonderful thing about Banned Books Week. What's wonderful about what Julia is doing is that this is a movement that is really grassroots. It's everybody coming together to make a difference, to respond to an injustice. And the comics community, they came together and they realized, hey, we've been dealing with this issue for decades. It's not going to go away. Let's create an ongoing way to deal with the problem. So I came on board back in 2020. I'm an attorney myself. We've been involved in challenges. When we were talking earlier before the show, you mentioned that you've worked with Cameron from Katy, Texas. Cameron Samuels, that was an incredible event several years ago. It was one of the early cases that we were involved in soon after I came on board. Probably the biggest one I think people are most familiar with the work now is our work in Virginia Beach. You may have heard of the attempt in Virginia to have genderqueer declared obscene to minors and made illegal to sell or illegal to distribute, even to give away in the state of Virginia. And I was counsel for the author of Genderqueer, and we defended that book in court and successfully had the law declared unconstitutional, which has had ripple effects around the country. So the work that Julia is doing, the work that Banned Books Week is doing, and now you know we're all doing together in Banned Books Week, is incredibly vital to get people to see that what's happening is a real problem. It's an ongoing problem. It's a problem that has a serious impact throughout all the nation and throughout every local community. It's wonderful to be a part of it.
Thank you so much for your work. Congratulations on that very important victory for Maya. Maya's been on the program before. Cameron was on with us. There's a really a great group of people that really care about protecting First Amendment rights in many different iterations. So I understand, too, that there was a series at Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, cbldf.org, US v. Comics, that kind of looks at a history of this. I'm also an historian, so that struck me as very interesting. And if you could you talk a little bit, the 70-year, we didn't just get here.
This is an anniversary year. I don't see much in the way of parties for it. I'm not sure there should be, but we did have a web series. There's a free speech handbook that's in a graphic novel that is a fantastic overview of the First Amendment and the issues that are facing everyone in the literary community today. 70 years ago was an interesting time. Comic books, in a way, the fusion of words and pictures goes back millennia, but it became a lot cheaper, a lot easier to distribute images, books that are basically printed with pictures and not just text. In the early 20th century, 1938, we had Superman, this character that really hit, selling millions of copies every month. Immediately, there's a newspaper strip, radio shows, toys everywhere. And comic books started flooding newsstands all across the country. And kids were reading them everywhere. Then people started saying, wait a second, if kids are reading comics, they're not reading books. Or comics are lurid, comics are sensational. And most dangerously, comics damage kids' mental health and turns them into juvenile delinquents. And this became the subject of actually a lot of academic inquiry. There were a number of academic articles saying how comic books corrupt kids, comic books are destroying literacy, comic books are promoting homosexuality, which back then was seen as a disorder that needed to be cured.
And a national security threat with the McCarran Act and others.
And there were also Senate hearings. There were hearings in New York legislature, there were hearings in the United States Senate, and the aim was to create a federal law restricting comics because they were a source of damage to kids. They were a threat to democracy, which the industry was able to stop by creating what was called the Comics Code. You may see it looks like a stamp. And the Comics Code was this self-regulatory set of rules on things you couldn't do. Crime couldn't win. There are certain words you couldn't use on covers. For a while, you couldn't show drugs. And it stifled a lot of creativity, led to a lot of publishers shutting down, even led to a rise of underground comics, independent comics outside the mainstream distribution, because they didn't want to be subject to these rules. As more free communication through comics went from underground to mainstream, that the reaction against comics intensified. And even now, you know, we're seeing the same arguments again. Virginia Beach and in Katy and elsewhere, we've seen people say that comics are a threat to literacy, comics damage mental health, comics cause all these problems for kids. And so it's 70 years later and we're still fighting the same battles.
Jeff Trexler, I can't thank you enough for continuing to fight these battles. And I think it's very important that people understand the history of these struggles, and especially young people that maybe have yet to have the opportunity to learn that they're not the first people to struggle against these things. As Julia Garnett just said earlier, there is that innate fear due to inexperience. Well, what's going to happen if I speak out? And what's going to happen if I say this? I think that history and the teaching of that history is really an integral part of emboldening and empowering, particularly young people, to do the things that Julia Garnett's doing now as Youth Honorary Chair for Banned Books Week. I just wanted to take this opportunity to remind our listeners, you're tuned to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. This is our Banned Books Week special. We do this every year, fortunately or unfortunately, depending upon how one looks at the situation. But I am always honored to be talking with amazing people on the front lines, from librarians to students and activists, attorneys, authors, artists, and others. We're going to continue our conversation about Banned Books Week after this brief musical break. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. Today, in this segment, we're looking at Banned Books Week. This year's theme, Freed Between the Lines, and we hope you'll look at some of the websites and the things that we're sharing today so that you can do some of that freeing between the lines yourself. Share the top 10 lists of banned books published by the American Library Association every year for your fall reading list. Spread it around your neighborhood amongst your friends, and hopefully you don't have enemies, but if you do, share it with them too. They probably need to read it. We're joined by Jeff Trexler, the interim director of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, and also Julia Garnett, who, among other things, is this year's youth honorary chair for Banned Books Week. And Julia Garnett, we started with you. Let's go back to you, and you just heard Jeff give that wonderful history and the fantastic victory with genderqueer. Julia, some of your reactions maybe to some of that history, and also, can you talk to us a little bit about your schedule this week? You're already an activist. You're a student in college. What are you up to in addition to these things that you're still very active? You still have this amazing priority, fighting for the right to read. Julia Garnett.
I guess I'd like to start with my reaction to what Jeff was talking about, because I definitely relate to when he was talking about banning graphic novels. One of the first times that I really heard the term book banning was in reference to a book my younger sister was reading, Drama, because it was challenged across the country for a minor character who happened to be gay, and it wasn't even the main part of the book. And that really surprised me and my sister as well. And it was really a learning moment for us for kind of the concept of book banning and what kind of concepts these groups were targeting. And at the same time, the book, well, you're talking about genderqueer, and a book that also relates to that is Flamer by Mike Curato. So those two books are really primarily challenged across the country. And I think it's frustrating that sometimes in these southern states, like where I live, we don't even get the chance to have those books in our library in the first place to have them banned. But I will say in my high school, we did have Flamer. And because of the chilling effect of state library policies and age-appropriate materials, that book disappeared from our libraries rather quickly after that. So I just wanted to touch on that and my reaction to talking about graphic novels and my experience with that, because I do think that they are very heavily targeted as well. And we look at the graphic novel version of The Handmaid's Tale, whereas some schools don't challenge the actual book, but they'll challenge the graphic novel because the book is kind of seen as that classic. And so they don't really put a ton of pressure all the time to challenge the book, but they'll go after the graphic novel. And a lot of times it is removed. In terms of talking about my schedule for college, it's definitely an adjustment, and also not being in the South anymore. So I'm kind of transitioning to more of a role of encouraging other students to speak out no matter where they are. And so having opportunities like this to come on and talk about my experiences, and also doing other interviews and things that I'll be doing next in terms of speaking on different panels. I'm hoping to have the opportunity to speak on a panel with Ava DuVernay and talk with her about what motivates her to be such a vocal activist and things like that. I'll also be hosting my own student panel. We're still working at this time to confirm the dates and times for that, but I'm really excited to speak with students across the country about their efforts to fight censorship and compare what we've been doing and kind of come together and show other students who might be watching, and older people as well, that you can really start anywhere and you can make a difference. And I think that's something that's so important to consider. I really relate to the quote that one voice is the key to unlocking so many others. And so when one person speaks out, it really gives avenues for others to see that they can do that as well. And so anything that I can do to further that goal and passions of mine, including LGBTQ rights, women's rights, all kind of tie together and intersect. And so anything that I can do, I'm happy to do it to further the cause and, you know, manage with my college schedule as well and classes. I'm actually currently in a banned book class, which is really cool, really exciting. We're talking actually about the history of book bans and looking at some older texts that maybe as commonly banned today, but looking at those reasonings. And it's so interesting how we can tie so much of the arguments of current people trying to ban books all the way back to Plato's The Republic, which is something that I hadn't thought about before. And I think that is so interesting to learn about. And I think I'm going to get so much out of this class, along with my others, taking a class on elections for government. So this is my plug to encourage everyone to register to vote and to go vote in every election. And I'm also taking a class on the intro to study of women and gender. And so looking at queer theory and feminism, it all kind of ties together and looking at history as well. I think we can learn so much by going back and looking at the past. So I'm very excited about my schedule this semester.
I'm excited for you. I'm doing an event. We're pre-recording, and by the time people hear this show across the country, it will be Banned Books Week. I'm doing an event on my campus with an English professor that has taught on banned books for nearly a decade, working with people in the library. And it's so heartening to see people, as you said, of all walks of life and all ages. It's never too late to wake up to these ideas. But it's, again, I'm always delighted to see young people really just have the fire and catch that bug that they have to learn more and they want to spread that love of knowledge and love of learning. It's really such an amazing foundation for what you can do with your life. And it's also infectious. When people hear, Julia, your passion, they get excited and they think, I can do these things too. And Jeff, people that may be cynical about, well, what can I do about that? Or this is way too complicated and it's very difficult. Then they hear about these victories. Mm-hmm. Then they hear about the history that you went over. Julia just reminded us of Plato, for goodness sake. This isn't new, these struggles. And we need to be reminded of that because the struggles must continue with each generation. We can't just rest on laurels or we can't just be defeatist. Like for the last several years, there's been a rise in this. We can't recoil in the face of this kind of adversity. That's when we need people like Julia. That's when we need Jeff. That's when we need Banned Books Week, ALA, and the Coalition, National Coalition Against Censorship, more. That's when these groups shine and remind people why they're there in the first place. And because we live in the United States of America, it boggles the mind that in 2024, I still run into people that say, censorship in America? What do you mean? You're crazy. Jeff Trexler, address that issue a little bit.
First, I want to say just how encouraging it is to me, because we were talking a bit about the history in the 1950s. In the 1950s, if you were a youth activist, you were rounding up comics from your community and taking them to the town square and having them burned. Photographs of this that have now become pretty infamous. So I'm glad you're not doing that, but that you've taken the other tack. And I'm also glad that you mentioned, say, Drama and Flamer. We actually have a case right now involving Flamer, and we've had cases involving Drama. In fact, Randa Telgemeier, the author of Drama, did a signing for us at Comic-Con, and it was amazing to see so many young people who were committed to this work and how much of a difference it was making in their lives. And I know that they're going to go on to do great things. I was glad to see your love of graphic novels. We're not immune to things in America. America's had these very interesting tensions throughout its history. There is this love of freedom, and there is also this deep moral streak, which sometimes can show itself in some good ways, and other times can show itself in the town people coming together, getting their pitchforks. There's a reason in shows like South Park, one of the recurring themes is the people coming together to cast out some person, to cast out something, to blame something for their troubles. It's a deep problem that we have, and the only way we're going to keep it from overwhelming us is for all of us to come together to make a difference and put a stop to it.
I couldn't agree more, Jeff Trexler. We actually, at Project Censored, the Censored Press, we're also publishers now. Adam Bessie is a great colleague of mine. He's taught English. He teaches courses on banned books. His book was called Going Remote, A Teacher's Journey, that he did with Portland artist Pete Glanting, that talks about the struggles of teaching during the pandemic, the pros and cons of technology, the surveillance and censorship that comes along with that. And it's a graphic nonfiction. It's actually gotten some attention, but you know, it also gets the pushback. And he's talked about this on this program before, of how comics was seen as a non-serious kind of art form, yet simultaneously, it drew the great ire of these moral panics, driving these moral panics. So it's kind of a very contradictory relationship that we have with things like comics, with graphics. But you were just at Comic-Con not long ago, and I'm curious to this, and I want to flip it over to Julia in a moment too. Could you share with our listeners, what was your experience engaging the people there in terms of how attuned or how hip are some of the people at Comic-Con, which are amazingly well attended? How do you do there? What's the reception?
Comic-Con, in many ways, gives me the energy to get through the rest of the year. You go through these battles, whether it's in court or you're talking to people in schools, local communities, dealing with trying to keep a retailer out of jail. It can get a bit wearing. There's all this stuff that happens. Even with the victories, there's a lot of hard work that has to be done. And you go to Comic-Con, there is such an outpouring of love, of conviction, of belief and understanding in what you do, of what you do. It is, it's truly an amazing experience to hear parents, to hear kids, to hear college students. We have a number of college students and law school students who volunteer for us, and to see their enthusiasm and also just to see how much they get it. So you talked about how comics aren't being seen as serious. And we saw that in Texas. We're seeing that around the country. You talked about remote education. Parents who see their kids were reading graphic novels at school. Their kids are being taught it in classes. And they say, well, we sent our kids to learn how to read, to learn how to do things. This is nonsense. But what people at Comic-Con get is that the new literacy requires you have to understand how to communicate through images. You have to understand how what we say can connect to what we show, what we see, the pictures. They get it. They see comics as the gateway to personal fulfillment and professional success.
That's amazing. And it's an amazing segue, you know, to see that kind of work. And I mean, again, because when sometimes people think that, they just think the Marvel, and I'm not saying there's no good stories there, but you know, the corporatization of and the Hollywoodizing of this kind of thing kind of overshadows it. But Comic-Con is so much more than all of that. And the world of graphic novels and graphic nonfiction is so broad and so much more. And it's such an incredible entry point for so many people, just like comics were back in the day of Superman. Right, Jeff?
It's a wonderful medium, and conventions are a way we can all come together and make a difference. Even local libraries are having Comic-Cons. Colleges are having Comic-Cons. It's a gathering of the community that care.
Yeah, they're all over the country. I mean, I know some of them are more well-known than others, but they're everywhere, even in Northern California and some of the smaller places in Sonoma County. We've had amazing events. They seem to be gaining traction, which is a really good thing. And to me, it's really about media literacy and multiple literacies. And one of the things we do at Project Censored is teach critical media literacy. And you know, anti-censorship is a big part of that. So people are subject to many different ideas. And Julia Garnett, let's bring you back in for the last word, so to speak, in this segment. Resonating on some of the things here that maybe Jeff is saying, I don't know if you have any involvement in the Comic-Con world or graphic books or graphic novels or any of those things. So I just figured I'd throw it over to you. And what was it that kind of hooked you in to really being a reader and to being somebody that was just into text and images and this passion for learning?
Well, I did mention that I have a mom who is a teacher. She started reading to me when I was really little. So I've just always been surrounded by so many books, and I'm so lucky to have that opportunity to really grow up valuing being able to read and being surrounded by books. So we were really open in my family about that and asking questions. However, I will say what really hooked me to fighting book banning, besides just wanting to protect young people's ability to empathize with texts that maybe they haven't experienced before, would be growing up as a queer student and not having access to books with queer representation because they either didn't really exist or weren't really out there for me to easily access. And so I kind of grew up feeling isolated, feeling different, and that caused a lot of confusion. I mean, it wasn't until my best friend came out in middle school that I kind of was like, oh, this is okay. This is something about myself that I recognize. And through that realization, I began to seek out books that would kind of reflect my experience with queer identities. And so I've been so lucky, you know, find so many great books that are challenged a lot of the time, but that I can really reflect with. So I've really taken to fighting book bans of books of all natures, because it's so important to me that students are able to read texts that they can identify with, they can recognize themselves within, but then they can also look through the window into someone else's life and see experiences that other people have been through and be able to empathize with that, because, you know, that's how we learn, that's how we grow as people. And without that, there's such a lack of connection. And I think that's something that sometimes online media can't give us. And that's why reading is so important for me to be able to promote. And I think with book banning, it kind of works in the opposite effect, because when you're trying to ban a book, you're just bringing more attention to that said book. The book Lawn Boy was removed from my high school and no one was really reading it. But after they removed it, 40 kids came to the library and asked to check it out. And that starts conversations, and that really causes people to want to read whatever material. So I guess I'd like to end with an idea, though, that kind of scares me almost more than public book banning. And I think it's something that's not really talked about a ton. And that would be, I kind of alluded to it before, but states are passing stricter age-appropriate materials laws. And that scares me more, because librarians are kind of quietly having to pull books, and it's not their fault at all. They're afraid for their jobs. They're afraid for the repercussions of communities, because we are seeing communities or parts of communities come together and accuse librarians of giving pornography to children. And so it's not their fault, but books are disappearing quietly. And I've kind of termed it in interviews, and when I'm talking, I'm calling it like phantom book banning, because it's not public, but these books are quietly disappearing. And it's so terrifying to me, this idea that we don't know about the books to be able to go and read them. And so they're just kind of quietly disappearing off the shelf. So I guess I'd like to end with that idea that we have to be aware and we have to pay attention, and we have to call into question these state laws that are slipping through, and we're not really talking about them maybe as much as we should, because this isn't just a Tennessee problem.
Half the states are trying to do these things. It's not just Florida and Texas or Tennessee. It's not just the stop wokeness and these types of things. It's happening all over the place, and often in smaller communities that are news deserts, where there's not a lot of local news or information, and it takes people committed of any age, but often students or librarians on the front lines, to call attention, to ring the alarm bell. Julia Garnett, again, you've given us so many reasons to celebrate this year's theme for Banned Books Week, Freed Between the Lines. And what's at stake here if we don't really fight against book bans and censorship and fight for the right to read? Julia Garnett, anything you want to share with people about any place to follow you or your work or websites or anything you want to share with people? You don't have to, but I'm just giving you the opportunity if you do.
I guess I always just like to end interviews with the idea for young people who might not know where to begin with activism or advocacy, that you can start anywhere. And you're also not alone. And there are people across the country, either in person or online, that can and will support you. You just kind of have to seek out those resources. A great place to start is the National Coalition Against Censorship. Love to support them. And, you know, we're not going to win every battle, but there are books that will be banned. And I think that it's important for us to regroup after that and to continue pushing forward, continue reading these books. Thank you.
Youth Honorary Chair this year for Banned Books Week, Julia Garnett. And Jeff Trexler, back to you. Any places you want to send people? Of course, we've mentioned the Comic Book Legal Defense. Anything else you'd like to share here?
Just a note of encouragement, building on what Julia said, which is, there are a lot of battles. We will lose some battles, but I'm convinced that in a way we've already won the war. Just like Plato was calling for the censorship of poetry, poetry won. People tried to ban comics in the 50s. Comics became the new mainstream. They're fighting against sort of the new ways of communication and new messages that we find in books today. It's important to fight these battles, but I think it's also important not to feel defeated and overwhelmed, because I do believe that culture and history are on our side. If anything's happening in their community, people should definitely reach out to us. We're at cbldf.org. If that ever seems confusing, Comic Book Legal Defense Fund.org. It's just the acronym. please, if there's any way we can help with the challenges to graphic novels, manga, animation, gaming, anything in your area, reach out to us. And if you'd like to volunteer, we're building a volunteer network. I'll be getting back in touch with everybody very, very soon. And we could use your help, whether you're an attorney, whether you do web design, whether you are a student who wants to help in your community. Everybody, I like to say, from pastors to plumbers, students, everybody, we want to bring them to bear in the community to be a force for good, be a force for change, to be a force for freedom. And we want to help you do that. So thanks to you. Thanks to Julia. There are a lot of good things happening.
It's been such an honor talking to you, Julia Garnett, and to you, Jeff Trexler, Interim Director of Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. And of course, you can learn more at bannedbooksweek.org. And Project Censored's been in the game for a bit too. You can go to projectcensored.org and see our banned books page.
You've been listening to the Project Censored show on Pacifica Radio, established in 2010 by myself and Peter Phillips. I'm Mickey Huff, the executive producer and host of the program. Anthony Fest is our longtime senior producer. The Project Censored show airs on roughly 50 stations around the United States from Maui to New York. To learn more about our work or find any of our previous archive programs, go to projectcensored.org. Please follow and like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and be sure to subscribe to the official Project Censored show on your cell phone's podcast application. Please feel free to share your feedback about our work at projectcensored.org. Thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Unthinkable crimes perpetrated by criminal minds, political ties, habitual lies, alibis, disguise, another guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse, got the skies like an ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison, genocide, wars, fall for little poison, the weapons manufactured paid for by attacks upon the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing, all the prisons, build the capacity, citizens, hypnotized by the master thief, confine and conquer, steal a masterpiece, open your eyes and realize what's happening, time's running out to reach all potential, if you ain't at the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got that love, we flipped our brothers and our sisters.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Election season is here, and at KBOO, we want Portlanders to be prepared to face their ballots with confidence. We've got a brand new limited series coming to our airwaves and your favorite podcast platform.